Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
It has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on a big
step!
Oh,
brother!
Lead Toledo, Ernest. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead!
Hello, and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast at HarvardParoxysm.com. I am Jason Mann, and with me as usual, Rich Craich. Rich, great to be back with you.
Absolutely. Excited.
I'm glad you're excited, Rich.
Yeah.
I'm always happy when you're excited.
This is a good one. This is going to be a fun little episode.
I think it will be a good episode. I'm waiting for the time in which you begin the show by saying you don't think it's going to be a good episode because I
that's true. There might be some.
All right. Well,
maybe that's my stock answer so that when people hear me not say that, they're like,
they know. If you don't say anything.
If I'm just silent, they're like, oh, no. All right. This one's going to be terrible. So.
All right. Well, fair enough. So
we'll see.
So we are going to talk about the wonderful ESPN NBA rank top 100 players of all time that was done over recent weeks. We meant to get this last week and things delayed. Unfortunately, our timing is not the best given that it is about 8 hours until the trade deadline or so, give or take a few. I guess more than that. But regardless, by the time people hear this, it's going to be trade deadline.
Nothing will happen.
So.
Overrated.
We'll get this one in early so you can listen to this.
It'll be early in the
first
morning. Yeah. It'll let you cool off a little bit before the hot trade deadline action starts.
Exactly.
So.
Or, you know, save it till later. It's going to be pretty much as relevant in a year from now as it is.
The benefit of our show.
Yeah, that is the nice thing. We're very evergreen. So.
Yeah, we just linked a because last year we did a trade deadline, a really good podcast with the guy who runs the NBA trades Tumblr.
And
it was awesome.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, duh, I was blanking on his name. But, that's an episode that I went back and listened to about half of it today. And I was like, you know what? We don't really ever say anything that, like you wouldn't know if we just said, hey, here's a brand new episode on, NBA trade deadline thing. So I think we should, from now on, just never, ever reference anything that's currently going on.
Okay.
And then we really only have to record, 10 shows a year and just, keep putting them out. And
all right. Well,
they might not even notice. I'll be like, oh, sweet.
We'll keep that
Scottie Pippen retrospective. I can't wait.
Yeah. We'll keep that in mind for business philosophy. So
exactly. Right.
All right. So we're gonna go through the first few slots. Obviously, we're not gonna go through all 100 because that'd be very boring. So we don't want to do that. But
we're gonna do mini retrospectives of every single man in this list.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, we're gonna go through
Sean Kemp. Oh, sorry.
We obviously did our top 50 project over the off season. That was our looking back at our choices for the top 50 players of all time, compared it to the NBA 50 greatest players of all time. That was done about 20 years ago. So. We're obviously going to kind of talk about that, talk about their findings versus our findings, talk about, some kind of the biggest ranking issues we had. And then we'll talk about some of the new players that they considered more recent players than we considered, whether they really merit such consideration, sort of some ideas about that. I don't know, anything else, Rich, we're going to talk about?
No, not really. I mean, I think a lot of it is going to be us sort of breaking down the list a little bit. And like you said, sort of comparing and contrasting it to our top 50 list is going to be the biggest thing versus us going on here and being like, oh my God, Moses Malone at 15, that sucks. That you don't need that. And I'm sure there's been 7,000 podcasts that have already done that. Because people do not react at all to NBA rank. They didn't care one bit. It elicited no social media reaction.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what was going on, to be honest. No, but obviously people are very passionate about where people ranked or whatever.
Sure.
And I don't know if we're going to worry about that as much as we're going to worry about a few guys that we had on our list that they didn't, or a few guys that we had very high on our list that they either had well out of the top 50 or well. And then I think the biggest thing that at least I know I wanted to talk about is a lot of the current players, because they were very aggressive about some guys. Whereas, we still had some current guys, but a lot of the guys we had sort of come to the conclusion that, hey, If they retired tomorrow, they would definitely be on this list. Whereas the ESPN one, you can make some arguments that maybe they're projecting some stuff onto guys. Maybe they're thinking, hey, you know, with this guy's trajectory, he will be there or whatever. So it'll be interesting to talk about sort of the philosophies of how they got to this list and stuff like that as well. So yeah. Not necessarily like us just breaking down their list and telling them how terrible they are for ranking, no. You know, this guy in 75th as opposed to 80th, because nobody wants to listen to that, but more kind of a compare and contrast, because we did this project essentially over the summer, so it's still fresh in our mind,
sure,
of doing it and knowing how difficult it is as well for a lot of people that are like, oh, this is terrible, like, you know, and I think most people took it pretty okay, other than just having a little bit of, you know, gripes with where certain guys ranked. But it is not easy, like we spent so long on that top 50 list to try to get what we thought was a representative top 50, and they went 100, so I can't even imagine the work that was into
and
that.
We didn't rank them and they ranked them,
so exactly that, I could never rank them. And I mentioned that today too, like I have such phobia about like for me the top 10 would probably change on like a daily basis for me, you know what I mean, like it's just me ranking is so hard, whereas it's much easier to say, hey, here's 100 guys that are really good versus like here are the top 100 in this order. I mean, that's where I just can't do that, so I envy them. Yes. In a way. But indeed.
Well, we'll go through the first few because I think there are some interesting things to kind of call from the first few. Number one, Michael Jordan, no big surprise. Number two, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Number three, LeBron James, maybe higher than some people might have expected. Number four, Magic Johnson. Number five, Wilt Chamberlain. Number six, Larry Bird. Number seven, Bill Russell. Number eight, Tim Duncan. Number nine, Shaquille O'Neal. Number 10, Hakeem Olajuwon. I don't have any significant issue with anybody there. I would probably put Oscar Robertson in the top 10 instead of Hakeem. He's ranked 11, so it's hardly a major qualm, but that would probably be the only thing that I would throw out there and consider, you know, a major difference that I would have. It's not even that major.
I'm with you there. I think Hakeem is the one guy that sort of stands out to me. And that was actually surprising when we were doing our top 50 list of looking at Hakeem and sort of stripping out a lot of what we perceive about Hakeem and just kind of looking at the raw numbers, looking at some sort of stuff. And he was a guy who, while, I mean, obviously a fantastic all-time legendary great player, didn't seem like he was on equal level with maybe like, you know, the top 10, the elite of the elite, like we're talking about here with this top 10. Again, not taking anything away from Hakeem, but like you said, Oscar Robertson's a very good choice to go into that 10 slot. You could even make a case for, you know, they have Kobe Bryant 12th. You could even maybe make a case for that. I like Jerry West or Julius Erving in there as well, yeah. But that's a minor qualm. I mean, all those guys that I'm listing, like Oscar, like you said, was 11th. Kobe was 12th. Jerry West was 13th. Julius Erving was 14th. Even a Moses Malone and Karl Malone, those are the next two guys at 15, 16. Those are guys that I could maybe, you know, you can maybe make a case to get into that top 10. But like you're saying, when you're doing that, you're sort of splitting hairs. I mean, I really, for the most part, they're top 20, which I'm sure we're going to go over here in a little bit. I really have no qualms about most of the guys in that top 20. So
yeah, and I mean, you went through 16. 17 is Dirk Nowitzki, 18 Charles Barkley, 19 John Stockton, 20 David Robinson. I would probably put Robinson a little bit higher because just, you know, the advanced stats were so blow away from him, but his reputation isn't quite that high, and you know, you can always kind of parse those a little bit. So, you know, 20's fine. I get that. The thing that did surprise me was Dirk being at 17. That seemed higher than I would have expected and kind of higher than we saw him on our project. And he was one of the kind of one of the six automatic players that we decided, okay, they definitely belong in, along with LeBron, along with Duncan, along with Kobe. Guys, this is post-1997 guys. But yeah. I would have put him six on that list. I would have put him behind Garnett, who's 21. I probably would have put him behind Dwayne Wade, who's 27. You know, nothing wrong with him. He's obviously fantastic. But, you know, I would have thought him a little bit lower, and he does seem
a little high, and obviously, you know, I'm a huge Dirk fan, sure. And of course, sure. But you know, putting him, I mean, there's even guys, you go through the rest of the top, you know, the top 25 or whatever, or the top 30, you see guys even like a Scottie Pippen, who's, you know, 25, yeah. and very far behind Dirk, which is pretty like staggering. Like even like an Elgin Baylor is another one there as well. So there's just a few interesting, yeah, he's kind of maybe a little too high for me, but one thing I did kind of notice, and I'm curious on your thoughts too, if you noticed it, that top 20, I mean, for better or for worse, a lot of guys from like 1985 to the present, you know what I mean? Like you look at the list, you got Jordan, obviously not Kareem, but you have Jordan, LeBron, Magic, you know, Bird, Duncan, Shaquille, you know, to a point, you could say Hakeem in there, you know, Kobe Bryant, Julius Erving, Karl Malone, Dirk Nowitzki, Charles Barkley, John Stockton, David Rodman. It just seemed very loaded. And that's not, I'm not saying that's a criticism. I mean, obviously those are all, you know, we talked about a legendary era of NBA history, but you look at that and it's very, you know, it's centered around like about 20, 25 years of NBA history versus, you know, so that was something I sort of noticed with that top 20. It was like, oh my God, there's a lot of like current or semi-current players in that top 20.
It really only Russell, Wilt, West, and Oscar in the top 20 play, you know, didn't play at all before 1980. And then everyone else played either their entire or a significant portion of their career, post 1980. I mean, Kareem, you know, he played for so long, so half his career was after 1980.
And he's not fair.
And then Dr. J, he'd be the other one. And but other than that, I mean, Moses a little bit, but yeah, pretty much everyone else is post 80, post 80 or post 84.
And not necessarily criticism, just kind of.
Yeah, I'm sure that's some bias. Yeah, it's not a surprising bias. I mean, recency bias is, you know, it's not shocking. Obviously, there's more fame in that era. It's more recent. There's more video of it. The game is more similar to what it is today. So it's easier to kind of put some things into context, all those reasons. So, I'm not really ripping it. It is interesting. So, if you consider the top 39, everyone on this list was in our top 50, except for Steph Curry, who was 23. I think we can get more to Steph in a little bit, but that,
let's do that.
But that's, you know, so, but that's, I think that's a fairly good ratio. And then if you look at the top 50, 42 of their top 50 was in our top 50. So, you know, the guys who were not in there, Elvin Hayes, Bill Walton, James Worthy, Dominique Wilkins, Willis Reed, Russell Westbrook, Ray Allen, all those guys, except for Westbrook, because he was just more recent, were guys we definitely, you know, considered. Some of them we strongly considered, you know, were kind of our Willis Reed and Ray Allen were kind of our last cuts. Elvin Hayes were probably my last cut. So, certainly guys who I think are absolutely, you know, worthy of being there. And if you look at the guys who were in this list but not in the top 50, Wes Unseld 53, Pau Gasol 56, those are obviously very close to 50. So I think those are similar decisions being made. It's not far off from what we believed. And Dennis Rodman at 64, Artis Gilmore at 70. I think we kind of took a little bit of a leap in putting those guys in the 50. I don't think those guys are necessarily consensus 50, maybe Gilmore at this point. But he, you know, he wasn't on the original top 50. He's kind of historically always been underrated. So, you know, that one, I don't mind. The ones that do kind of throw me, Dolph Schayes at 74, Sam Jones at 78, Billy Cunningham at 88, and Paul Arizin at 90. Like, those seem way too low to me.
Yeah, Arizin at 90 especially. Yeah. It's like, ooh, boy.
Schayes at 74.
I mean, that's a good ass player.
Schayes feels like a top 30 player to me.
Yeah, that's it.
Again, considering what he did during his era, his longevity, you know, he's one of the probably the three best players of, you know, playing over his career, three or four best players playing over his career. So I think he definitely belongs there. Sam Jones, it's close. It's not quite as far for him. But yeah, I mean, those guys, I think, would bounce off. Those guys definitely are detracted because they played so long ago and they're not the absolute, like, you know, top notch guys that, you know, the Oscar, Wilt, the guys who are really still remembered very well. Those guys either, you know, weren't as that high profile or just played too long ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they don't come top to mind. I mean, if you're sort of asking somebody, and again, it's somebody who's not maybe doing a ton of look at NBA history or whatever. Maybe they're a current fan and they know a little bit about the history, but those are guys that are just not going to come up or come up top of mind to someone who's, you know, casually in the NBA history or just sort of even if they're a really passionate fan, they're not ones that really, you know, before doing this podcast a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, before, you know, a few years before we really started getting into this and I started getting into NBA history, you know, if you told me top 100 players, you know, Paul Ayers and probably might not have been, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if he would have been there, but now doing the research, going back, you know, us doing what we did in the summer, then you sort of shine a light on guys like a Dolph Schayes or Paul Ayers. And so I get, and again, not a criticism, but yeah, just something that was a little interesting of how low they were. And I'm right with you on the Gilmore and Rodman. Those are guys that I think we sort of, I don't want to say sort of cheerleaded for a little bit. I mean, I'm happy they're on our list, but there are guys that, yeah, absolutely. If you told me there's no way Dennis Rodman's a top 50 player, I wouldn't argue with you. I'd go, okay, that's fine. I mean, I think he is. You don't. That's fine. Yeah, that's they're not guys that I'm like, no, you're absolutely wrong if you don't put them in your top 50. I get it where they wouldn't be.
Dolph, not Dolph.
I don't know. Dolph kind of has to be in.
He has to be in the top 50. There's no question about that. Yeah, I mean, Sam Jones, Billy Cunningham, I think are borderline top 50. I put them in, but we didn't put Cunningham in, but he's close. Sam Jones, I think, should be in. Arizona definitely think should be in. Yeah, so those are the two. The other ones, the three players who were on the top 50 greatest of all time list that weren't ranked in the NBA rank, Bill Sharman, Dave Bing, Hal Greer. I think Sharman's the biggest oversight on that. I mean, he really did a lot to sort of create the modern shooting guard position. He was really, really effective during his time. Important part of those early Celtics championship teams. He's kind of a surprise that he wasn't in there at all. Greer's a perpetually underrated guy, but to not make the list was surprising. Bing's a little bit more famous, I think, but not quite as good. I think he definitely should be on the list, but I would put him sort of, you know, like in the 80s or 90s. I think Sharman's definitely the biggest oversight. The other ones are, I get why they weren't included, but they were a little bit head scratching for me.
Absolutely.
Especially you can look at the top 50 list and if you're doing your research on top 100, I would think you would consult the top 50 list and look into the guys. You know, I'm sure, you know, right. There are guys who weren't, you know, not everyone had heard of. So that seems sort of like an easy one, but
I'm with you on Sharman as well.
Yeah, definitely.
He's no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I would think, you know, for my biggest issue sort of with this list is it's pretty unfair to the 50s players. We already talked about Shays and Arizin and a Sharman. Bob Pettit was 34 and George Mikan was 33. I think those guys definitely. I mean,
Bob Pettit's awesome. I mean, yeah. That's a guy who I think I'm not even sure I appreciate him quite enough. But when I think you were tweeting out about this while it was going on, and I think you and Curtis Harris were going on there and going, oh my God, Pettit at 34, that's you know, ridiculous, or I forgot the exact wording, maybe not, you know, that aggressive about it. And I remember, even though I did this research, you know, not that long ago, I said, you know, let me go look at Bob Pettit's like career numbers or whatever. And when you look, it is just, it's astounding what that guy did. I mean, of course, the longevity might not be there for some people, but man, what he did when he was playing. And even though the longevity for that era wasn't awful, but man, that guy was just a killer. I mean, it's just his page, his basketball reference page is like almost all bold. I mean, that guy just dominated statistically like nobody I've seen of that era. Yeah. I mean, it's just insane what he did.
And into the 60s, into the more competitive, more integrated era too. It wasn't just the early 50s. I mean, he started his career, I think, 52-53. He kind of played into, I mean, he had a 12-13 year career, a strong one. He was very high in the leaderboards when he retired. He was all time leading scorer, I did a lot to, really, to set the template for the power forward position.
I mean, he averaged 26-16.
Like, yeah, and
you know what I mean? Like, there we go. Yeah. Like, that's it.
Efficient,
like,
first time, led his team to a championship and I think four finals appearances. And Mike, and I mean, you know, he won like seven championships in 8 years, was the dominant player of his decade. Like, it's fine. You know, I know in a few years later, he was not going to be the league changed and, you know, he wouldn't make it. Probably in the 60s game, definitely not in the modern game, but that's not what we're arguing. You know, we're arguing, as we've talked about in our criteria before, you know, you have to consider them within the context of your era. And, you know, I can see the argument certainly that, well, the 50s era wasn't as strong as as later eras. And you have to kind of consider, the strength of an era when you consider, you know, how good the players were. I mean, if it's a lesser era, then you have to kind of count that a little bit less. If it's a stronger era, you have to count that a little more. But then again, it's also hard to judge, I think, what eras are best and what eras aren't best, because there's so many factors that you kind of have to consider. And obviously, problems with evaluating 50s and 60s players, a lack of lack of video footage, lack of, you know, info beyond the basic stats, different style of play, obviously racism's effect on the game. In the early 50s, the Black players are barred from the game, and then basically a quota system up until the mid to late 60s. So, so obviously, you know, those are important factors. And you know, you know, that's brought to my attention is sort of like some people who don't, you know, just kind of can't take that era seriously or just can't value that era in the same way because of that issue. And I get that, but I don't, you know, I do think the dominant players of that era still, you know, made their mark, were important. And, you know, you have to also factor that it was, you know, a league with only 8 teams and only 80 players in the league. And, you know, that's a pretty competitive league right there. So, you know, it's, you know, we have 450 players now. I mean, so, I mean, obviously,
well, and like
we have a lot more people who are strong in basketball, but still, I mean, there's so many things to kind of consider in there.
No, and like I said, and we talked about it during our top 50. I mean, these guys can't control what era they play. I mean, Bob Pettit could only be good in the era he was in. You know what I mean? Like, he couldn't it's not his fault that these sort of factors came into it. He could only live in the era he lived in and play in the era he played in. So I always judge it by, okay, look at what they did in the time when they played, and not really worry of what kind of basketball it was and what sort. I mean, yeah, there's of course some weird oddities here and there and stuff like that, but to sort of undermine these guys because of those sort of things and because of racism and because of the lowest teams and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I mean, those are all factors. And if I was having a discussion with you and saying, hey, what's the best era of basketball ever? Who's the, you know, yeah, but when you're ranking these sort of guys and talking about this sort of stuff, yeah, you kind of have to, I think you have to think of guys in their era. And Bob Pettit's a guy who just completely dominated his era. And it's not his fault that there were X amount of teams, that there were a ratio or a quota of you know, African-American player. I mean, that's not his fault necessarily. So I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to say, well, Bob Pettit is not, you know, a top 15 player of all time because he only had 8 teams when he played. It's like, sure, you know, that's just silly. Yeah. Like, why?
I mean, you know, you can think about all these things. I think weighing these factors are fine, but I think just I think these guys are more penalized because it was so long ago as opposed to really taking a deep look into some of those things. I obviously could be wrong. I don't know. You know, there was some writing about, you know, where guys stood, but it's not, you know, obviously it's just a collection of voters, and not everyone revealed their reasons and how good a job they did researching and so forth. But I mean, I would say Rick Barry, Walt Frazier were 37, 38. Some of the 60s and 70s players, I think, got a little bit undervalued, but I don't think that was quite as dramatic of an effect. I mean, I think of Barry and Frazier maybe in the top 25, but, you know, so they're not necessarily that far off. Not as far off as Pettit and especially Mikan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So talking about the rankings of the current players who are not in our top 50, and, you know, initially, because initially this came out as like positional ranks, and the big thing that got everyone's attention at first is that Steph Curry was rated the 4th best point guard of all time, which, you know, obviously seems very premature. he is having an incredible
warning. We like Steph Curry.
An incredible, great, you know, tremendous, historic season right now. He's 50 games into that season, and you know, we'll likely finish it at one of the great, if not the greatest, at least offensive production season of all time. So that certainly matters. He's also on one of the greatest teams of all time. That certainly matters, and is the most important reason, I think, for that, for them being that. So, you know, all those things matter. I certainly think, you know, we kind of made our cutoff. I think Durant was the most recent player that we kind of made for our cutoff on how, you know, what's the latest a player can start their career to kind of achieve our list.
Sure.
But, you know, looking at Curry's resume, you know, I now think top 50 is he has a reasonable case for top 50. Top 25, it's still a little bit.
That's yeah. High. I mean, that's, and I love Steph Curry. I think, but you have to sort of, and this is the factor we brought up with our top 50, is if tomorrow Steph Curry just says, you know what, I retire, I'm done, you know, this is stupid, I don't care, I'm done. You know, if you look at that rating, then take, you know, wait another 10 years. So he retires tomorrow, then you wait 10 years and you go back and look and you go, Steph Curry, 23 all time. I don't know about it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we're sort of assuming, and rightfully so. I mean, yeah, the guy is probably, barring a horrible, horrific injury or something awful, is going to get to that point most likely. He's going to be a top 50 player. Like you said, he's probably already at that point now. And for all intents and purposes, we'll probably make it to the top 25. But it's just right now, this year, not, it just seems a little too early for that. Especially when, and we're going to talk about it in a little bit, he's got peers that are, you know, comparable if you really strip away some of the number, or strip away some of the sort of biases you might have about that player in particular, or what the success of that guy. If you just look at pure numbers and statistics wise, there are some guys like a Russell Westbrook, we'll talk about here in a little bit, and even a James Harden, who have a case, you know, just as good as Steph Curry. And that's not to say that Steph Curry is not going to be better than them all time, but right now, at this moment, as we're ranking, you know, ranking this, those guys are, you know, almost, you know, like Russell Westbrook's is 49th and Steph Curry's 23rd. It's just, it seems like a very odd sort of gap between those two. Whereas I'd be fine if Steph Curry was 45th or whatever, I'd say, okay, that's fine. That's good. That's good with me. 23rd just seems a little high. Yeah. I mean, that's just, I don't know. It's a little bit much, especially when you got, you know, there's some pretty good guys that are sort of behind him. Like I feel like Scottie Pippen should probably be, you know, a little higher than Steph Curry at this point.
Right.
But,
and,
you know.
Right.
Or George Mikan. or Bob Bennett, but you know.
Sure. Yeah, and I think that, you know, you can argue, okay, well, Scottie Pippen never had a peak season that Steph Curry has. And I guess, you know, it depends on what you're weighing, too. I mean, if you weigh peak higher than I think that we did, if that's really, like, your biggest factor in longevity isn't quite as important, then, okay, sure. Then I guess, you know, I'll throw that at you. But I do think, you know, it's got to be a blend of peak and longevity. But yeah, looking at Curry's case, a 2015 MVP, one of only a handful of players to win an MVP and title in the same season, one All-NBA first team, one second team. He'll get another first team, of course, this year for certain. Three seasons top 10 in win shares per 48, four seasons box score plus minus. That includes this season, by the way, which is not finished, but presumably he will remain in
those. I think he's going to get there, yeah.
he is 33rd all-time in MVP award shares. Obviously, he has, you know, is going to probably win another MVP this year, so that will certainly raise up. I mean, two MVPs in a row, then, you know, that you're starting to get into territory where I'm feeling comfortable, you know, putting you in your, you know, in the top 30, top 40. I mean, you know, achieving two titles in a row, you know, once he does that, then I think, you know, we start to have another case of bumping.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Two MVPs and two titles in back-to-back. Yeah. I mean,
that's nice. He's obviously on track for that. It's a right. Strong possibility that could happen. You know, and if they continue, you know, having their great success, if he has another two or three just awesome years and, you know, and so forth, then yeah. Okay. Then we're starting to feel like, okay, top 25, top 20, you know, maybe even higher depending on, you know, how great those achievements are. But, obviously still a ways to go, as far as that goes. So all time ranks are 25th in win shares for 48, 11th in box score plus minus, which, again, only goes back to 74. He's third in free throw percentage, second in 3-point percentage, 26th all time in three pointers, and that's going to be getting higher pretty soon, and ninth in true shooting percentage. So obviously those accomplishments in three pointers are quite impressive. He will rise up the leaderboard, will be you know, first in three pointers probably in really just a handful of seasons. I think he's that far.
Yeah, it won't take him long. Yeah, it really will not take him that long, shockingly. I mean, it seems surprising, but yeah, I mean, if you look at the leaderboards and just how he's just decimating those leaderboards. I mean, the yearly like output that he's doing is just ungodly by you know, previous
standards. Ray Allen is just a couple short of 2000 and Steph is at 1436. So
yeah, it's pretty obnoxious how quickly he's probably going to be better.
And so Steph's had you know, two historic seasons and then two very good seasons, I would say. But maybe excellent seasons. So you know, if you kind of compare that to somebody like, I don't know, like Earl Monroe, you know, I mean, that's kind of like at the level that he would have. And then he had sort of had the rest of his career where he was, you know, pretty good or okay, depending on, you know, he kind of was up and down. But I think if he retired right now, you're kind of at that point without obviously not as great of a peak, but That's sort of where, you know, where you would kind of think of him if he had played, you know, 30 years ago. So, also, one thing we didn't, we should have talked about, is that there were only three players on the top 50 that were, that we didn't actually, or that we did talk about that were not on the top 50 list, which was Kevin Johnson, Dan Issel, and Sean Marion. I do think they would have been top 100, especially Issel and Johnson. But yeah, I guess a little surprised that Johnson isn't on there. I wonder if his recent scandal revelations had...
I'd imagine that plays a small part in it. It's very hard not to sort of, and I think we even wrestled with that a little bit too. It's like, if we leave him out, I won't be too upset.
Right. Yeah. I think when we recorded the show, like the latest in that had not dropped yet. So, and then the show came out after it did and we didn't mention it. I was like, well, you know, probably for the best. So, yeah, and he played more career minutes than Bill Walton, who we didn't have in our top 50, but made this ESPN rank. So, and I think there's some interesting kind of parallels there as far as, you know, early career, a little bit beset with injuries, although Curry, for the most part, has been healthy, more healthy.
Yeah, that's such a far, it's so far gone now, it seems, at this point. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, because if you remember the narrative, I mean, it was just this guy. I mean, this guy's ankles, it's going to rob us of, like, a very good shooter of all time. You know, there was, like, legit claims or legit thoughts that, man, this guy is just never going to be right, and that sucks because he's such a good shooter, and that's so far in the distance now.
Yeah, I mean, he's played really only one season. He played 26 games 1 year. Every year of him that he's played 74 more games, so it hasn't been an issue. Hopefully it will not be an issue for the rest of his career. But you know, Walton kind of, you know, he battled injuries, but then, you know, had just like a 2 year season amazing peak, nowhere near statistically what Steph is doing, but he had that sort of same sort of like you know, people kind of remember him in that magical way. He has that peak, you know, kind of that mystique, that you know, different level than what Steph is doing, because, you know, obviously a lot more fame in this era. But the kind of the way that he got people excited about how he played, I feel like there's some similarities there.
Absolutely.
So next is Russell Westbrook. So talk a little bit about how Westbrook compares to Curry, because it's actually, well, honestly, closer than you think, but maybe statistically has a better case than Curry does.
And I don't have it in front of me, but I think Westbrook's got one more year or one extra year on Curry, right? Or is it? I forgot who's got one. Someone's got 1 year higher.
Westbrook has one more season.
Okay. So that's it. Okay. I just want to make sure I was correct there. But so I did what I did, a little bit of a comparison of like guards of this sort of era. So I basically did from Russell Westbrook's rookie year to his current year. And that, of course, will include Steph Curry, you know, minus 1 year there and there. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, Steph Curry, he's third in points per 36. Russell Westbrook's second in points per 36. Russell Westbrook's 13 in assists per 36, which I was kind of shocked that he was that high. Steph Curry's 21st, but of course, knowing sort of the Steph Curry thing, but still, it's very interesting. Steph Curry's 35th in rebounds per 36. Russell Westbrook is fifth in rebounds per 36. So you look at Russell right there. I mean, you look at a guy who's second in points, 13th in assists, and fifth in rebounds. I mean, that perfectly describes, you know, the sort of the Russell Westbrook experience there. Here's where we get a little bit of a gap. Steph Curry is first in effective field goal percentage. It'll be a shock to you, but Russell Westbrook is not in the top 5 or the top 50 or the top 100. He's actually 131st in effective field goal percentage, but that's Russell Westbrook. So that's, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, then you look at some other stuff. Steph Curry is third in win shares per 48. Russell Westbrook is eighth in win shares per 48. Russell Westbrook's fifth in win shares. Steph Curry's third in win shares. Then Russell Westbrook's third in value over replacement player. And Steph Curry's, because I also kind of looked at him in only his career, he's third in value over replacement player. But it's like a very minor difference between those two. And it, of course, I was doing a lot of this as the season was going on. So they were sort of, they were close enough where it was switching at different times. So they're very close in value over replacement player, very close, you know, in win shares and even win shares per 48. So I just thought it was interesting of that. We look at a guy, you know, Steph Curry is a, you know, 23rd, and Russell Westbrook, who, you know, on pure like sort of counting stats of the points, rebounds, and assists, is right there. Of course, Steph has a little bit more in terms of efficiency, which helps him out a lot in, you know, the win shares and, you know, value replacement player and all that sort of stuff. But it's an interesting case for a guy that's, you know, 49th on this list. And I don't think anybody really bats an eye at the fact that he's 49th, but he's got a decent case. And that's why I was saying, you know, I'd be cool if Steph Curry was like a 45th or whatever, and Russell Westbrook was 49. Like, that seems a little bit more. But to have this large of a gap between the two, when really, you know, statistically, there's not that big of a gap there. But, you know, it's sort of you're extrapolating a lot of what Steph's going to do this year. But, you know, Russell Westbrook's still got a lot of career left.
Yeah, and
you can be honest that he's just kind of finding himself in a lot of ways. I mean, he's having one of his best years. Last year was, of course, because he was just literally given the ball every single time and said, okay, we have nothing else. Do whatever you want or whatever. But we're starting to see a sort of a maturing Russell Westbrook, a guy that you could extrapolate as well and say, you know, over the next 5 years, if that guy stays healthy and doesn't, you know, kill himself by just diving and dunking with reckless abandon or whatever, he's a guy that could become a real, I mean, especially so if him and Durant break up at any point, if Durant goes somewhere or Westbrook goes anywhere, this is a guy who just can explode statistically and explode, you know, in many different ways. So I just found it kind of interesting that he was 49th and Curry was 23rd, because it's the gap, I think, is a lot closer than that.
Yeah. And Westbrook is a few months younger as well. So
exactly.
So they're same age, have this, you know, that breakup thing as well. Yeah, they both have 3 seasons top 10 win shares for 48 and 4 seasons top 10 block score plus minus. So kind of right there all times. Yeah, and all time, Westbrook is 10th all time in assist percentage, which is just shocking considering he's, you know, his reputation as a ball hog. That seems pretty silly. 7th in usage rate. Okay, that might be more in line with
that. That sounds
but you get what I'm saying. And yeah, 77th in winches are 48. Not very good, but not quite as impressive. And 21st in box for plus minus. So, but yeah, as far as like kind of those career accomplishments, he's right there. A 4-time on the All-NBA second team. Probably a good chance he'll be in the first team this year, I would guess. And then, you know, as far as the other ones go, like, I don't have necessarily strong feelings about any of them being on this list. Well, I guess there's one actually that looking at his production versus his reputation, I think is pretty interesting. James Harden, who I think is very comparable to Westbrook and
people just had a heart attack.
Curry. but you know, Harden has 4 seasons top 10 win shares for 48, so more than Westbrook and Curry. 5 seasons box score plus minus in the top 10, also more than Westbrook or Curry. Very similar ranking in MVP award shares, 41st all time versus 33rd all time for Curry. So, and you kind of compare them by era, they're pretty similar as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have, I mentioned the aforementioned numbers about Curry and Westbrook. Harden, who, you know, of course, relatively similar area here, 5th in points per 36, 37th in rebounds per 36, 77th in assists per 36. He really gets a lot of in the value stats, believe it or not. 2nd in win shares, 2nd in win shares per 48, and then 4th in value over replacement players. So you look again, you know, if counting stats are sort of your deal, I mean, he's right there with those. But then the other ones, I mean, the value stats, the win shares, and the value over replacement player, I mean, he's right there with those guys. I mean, they are in that sort of top five of this era of guards right there. So it's pretty startling that he was, you know, 98. And again, you could, if you strip away everything, and if I just gave you those sort of ranks and said, hey, you know, tell me who these three guys are, it'd be shocking to you if it was, you know, James Harden and Steph Curry are kind of neck and neck in those things. And that's that even surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, and he is 18th all time in win shares for 48, 17th all time in box score plus minus. So that puts him ahead of Curry in one and right behind him in the other. So I think people obviously think Harden is great. He was a runner-up for MVP last year. I think the defense and the malaise of his team this year have knocked him down a peg. But I would say if you're comparing the three of them, I think they are fairly similar. And Harden is 98th, so I find that interesting. And you know, hey, there may be, you know, again, there's a lot of things that you're measuring here. Stats are clearly not everything. It is sort of a little bit puzzling. It's like, oh, why is Harden so much lower than the rest of these guys?
Yeah, what's surprising as well, and I think that's why I was shocked by it too, is that you have to really look and you know, doing this, I did a little bit of research on Harden's career, and of course, we all know that he started in OKC and that sort of stuff, but you really look at it, I mean, like, his output was great. I mean, his per-minute output was fantastic in Oklahoma City, but he just wasn't getting the minutes or the ball that much, and it's kind of shocking and surprising that a lot of this stuff of these gaudy numbers have come in the last, you know, few years as he's moved and transitioned to Houston, so it's kind of shocking too that we look at this guy, you know, a guy like a Curry, who, you know, maybe had 1 year where he kind of had to learn the ropes, and Westbrook, you know, maybe one as well. You know, you could argue that James Harden, it took, you know, 2-3 years for him to really find his footing, and then exploded, of course, when he went to Houston. But yeah, I mean, it's shocking how well he's done, despite the fact that he was sort of the third fiddle on that team for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other guys on this list, Blake Griffin, 75th, Chris Bosh, 86th, Mark Gasol, 95th, and Kevin Love, 99. Blake's actually resume was stronger than I kind of realized. He's another guy whose reputation has kind of taken a hit lately because of off-court antics. But he does have four All-NBA team appearances, including three in the second team, one on the third team. He has two seasons in the top 10 in win shares for 48, one time in box score plus-minus. hasn't really played long enough to really achieve any all-time ranks. He's definitely a fun guy to watch, but he's actually probably accumulated more, especially in those All-NBA teams, than I kind of had realized he had.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked as well. He was another one that, yeah, you just don't think, and that could be a reputation thing as well. It could be just sort of how we perceive these guys, but and he's a guy that even as the season's going on, and even when I look at his stats, I'm always kind of shocked. Oh my, yeah, Blake Griffin's actually having like a very good year. We just don't appreciate the guy. I don't know. It's very odd. It's very strange. But
people kind of realize he's good, but you kind of like how,
not on that good level. Yeah. Like he's a good little asset to a team that he's like, you know, he's a very good player, but he'd be great if he had, you know. It's just, I don't know. It's interesting. I just don't know if we fully appreciate quite how good he really is.
Yeah, it's definitely like he's accomplished more than I think people would realize.
Oh, absolutely.
And a guy who has less of these achievements than I would have thought. He was kind of an original guy we were looking at for our top 50, but just didn't really have his rankings just kind of statistically, his profile was just not strong enough for us to consider it, despite, you know, we both, I think, respect him as a player and think of him as close to that level as Chris Bosh. Only one All-NBA team for his career is a second team.
I'm so surprised that in those, I mean, especially those lean Toronto years when it was just him. Like it was, you know, it was like, here's the ball, Chris Bosh. You have it you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm shocked and have... Right. A lot of your numbers are, I feel like I living in that area, you know, living and watching at that time, I felt like he was a guy that was like an all-star, like a top tier sort of player, just because he put up such gaudy numbers, but I guess not.
Yeah, and those teams, you know, they had some up and down years, but they were pretty good. And you know, he's like a 12-time all-star. So he's gotten the things that way. But and actually statistically, no top 10 seasons in winters for 48, none also in box score plus minus. He does have two top 10 seasons in PER if you want to look at that. But, you know, the all-time ranks are he's 71st in winters for 48, which is pretty good. Box score plus minus doesn't really like him, despite his reputation for being a great defender, 169th. So definitely a guy who I think the stats don't necessarily show his value, particularly when he, you know, played in Miami. I think he's greater than that shows, but surprisingly ranks surprisingly low in a lot of these categories.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about a guy we talked about, James Harden earlier, I mean, Chris Bosh is 86th on this list, James Harden's 98th, and James Harden just absolutely blows him away, you know, statistically.
And,
so,
and I'm not saying that I would necessarily pick James Harden over Chris Bosh, but I just...
No.
But the resume definitely is more impressive for Harden.
Right. And a lot of that, as you mentioned, the Miami years as well sort of maybe hurt Bosh a little bit in terms of he very quickly sort of put himself, for the betterment of the team, put himself in a very, you know, strict role, which didn't really... It didn't really help him continue the gaudy numbers that he had for so many years. He sort of said, okay, you know what? Hey, I'll just kind of sit in the corner. I'll do this. I'll play great defense and do this sort of stuff. And he was, you know, instrumental to the defensive of that Miami team, and just a really good defender, maybe an underrated defender. So some of these stats don't really show that out as well, of the spacing stuff that he was able to do and cutting off lanes and doing that sort of stuff he was able to do in Miami. But still, when you sort of look at these resumes the way we're doing it, yeah, he doesn't jump off at the page for you at all.
Yeah. I'm not sure for Marc Gasol or Kevin Love, you know, if there's anything specific. I view them as sort of borderline guys for this list. I mean, Gasol had one Defensive Player of the Year award, twice on the All-NBA team, one All-NBA first team, only one season in the top 10 in Winchester 48, one season in the top 10 in Box Score Plus Minus. You know, all-time ranks are good, but nothing spectacular. 84th in Winchester 48, 38th in Box Score Plus Minus, so that's stronger. But a very good player, but probably developed a little bit too late into a really valuable player, and then is kind of gotten to the point where he's gotten older and is still good, but not quite as good.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Love, production is a little bit stronger than I expected. He had three seasons in the top 10 in Winchester 48, two in Box Score Plus Minus. Has sort of suffered in his production since he moved on to Cleveland. I think it'll get kind of be like a wait and see thing for depending on how much they accomplish and how, you know, productive he can kind of be in that framework, because he's not, unlike Bosch, he's not really adding a lot of value in the intangibles for the most part. I mean, I guess maybe somewhat in, you know, offensive spacing and things like that, but he's probably taking a lot away in defense. So it would be hard to rate him, you know, kind of based on that. Give him a pass kind of based on that.
Yeah. Agree. Yeah, but yeah, he jumped off the page a little bit statistically, but I get sort of 99th. I think that's fine with him. I mean,
yeah,
that's okay. I mean, I could probably make an argument for a few guys to sort of take him off and put on, but yeah, it's hard to get really upset about, you know, the 99th guy in the top 100 list.
Exactly. So a couple of things that we wanted to add before we take off are so there is a new an Island Calculus a new metric called HBox has been about Justin Willard has been created that we were kind of looking at, and the idea is that it is basically a new way of looking at historical players, sort of a new metric created for that, and that's obviously is exciting for us because we are, evaluating old players, and sometimes the regular box score numbers or even the advanced stats have a hard time capturing everything. So this is sort of an attempt at a one number metric to look at a lot of different things. So what about it seems interesting to you? And you know, looking at some of the searches, what do you think is most interesting?
One of the things that I really liked about it, and again, I go to nyloncalculus.com to get a little bit more information about it. We're big dummies,
yeah.
So we probably can't explain it as well as he explains it, because we're still trying to figure it out as well. I'm not going to act like I'm an expert or I know about it. I mean, of course, and they're very easy to reach as well. So I'm sure if you have a question about, hey, I don't quite understand this about the stat, go there and ask them. I'm sure they'll be, more than willing to help. But yeah, like it said, it's another box score stat, but it takes a few other things into account. Different stuff like per possession stuff, a little bit more that we now have a little bit more information and can kind of dig into the box score stats a little bit more and look at some other stuff. So it helps in that way. It's kind of cool in that respect. But what I really loved about it was that it broke down guys by season as well. Initially, I kind of got mad about that. I was like, oh man, I wanted to see like who's like the all-time ranks or whatever. And then I sort of said, it's kind of cool to look at like, hey, what, per HBox, what is the best Michael Jordan season? What's the best LeBron James? You know, that was kind of fun as well. And we sort of, in playing around with it, looked at guys that had, above six in HBox. And the stat, it's lower sort of numbers as well. So six is like tremendous. Six is like all time, anything above that is like, you're tremendously great. You're awesome. Yeah. You're all time good or whatever. So we wanted to sort of look at.
Just sorry to interrupt, but the highest possible or the highest ever is 9.47.
Right. So that gives you a little area or an idea that's, six to the nine is
And there are close to 40 seasons that go above six. Is that right? right? Something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somewhere around that range, I think is. Yeah, I think that's around the number that I got. But yeah, it was kind of interesting to see sort of the breakdown of these guys who had over six, and it can kind of give you an idea of maybe, you know, maybe what the stat favors, what sort of things it favors, because that's always something I enjoy about, you know, basketball metrics. You're not supposed to say ever, PR, that's the only stat I'm ever going to use forever. It's like, no, don't do that. Stop doing that. Stop being that guy. But yeah, instead, you sort of look at the different ones, look at different numbers, and then you can sort of, I think, contextualize of, okay, this stat maybe favors this. Like we talked about the win shares per 48 or whatever, different things like that, that maybe, you know, the guys with a little bit of a higher efficiency, they'll do a little bit better in that, whereas the guys with gaudy, you know, counting stats don't do as well in win shares or valuable replacement player. This stat, they do better in that. Or, you know, and PR has its weird stuff. They all have their sort of things that they favor a little bit, because it's going to happen with, you know, metrics where you're trying to put everything into one. So this is kind of interesting to see the breakdown of guys that had above six to sort of see what the stat favors. And I guess we'll sort of work through it, you know, as we talk about it. But so here are all the guys that had, you know, seasons above. I'm just going to list how many seasons they had above six. I'm not going to list.
We should also mention that this dates back to 1978.
Exactly. Yeah. So like many of these ones, unfortunately, yeah, it very much is like, I can't help you in the 1960s because the stats are terrible. Any stat keeping or record keeping was horrendous. So there's only so much you can do with
that.
They
didn't keep track of, you know, they didn't have steals, blocks, and rebounds. I mean, didn't have stats. I mean, they're like, they were bad at keeping the stats. They just didn't have what they have to, you know, later on. So,
but yeah, some kind of guys here with above six HBox seasons. Bill Walton had one. Charles Barkley had one. Chris Paul won. David Robinson, five, actually.
Yeah.
I was pretty surprising. 91, 92, 94, 95, 96. So we've talked about it a lot. We're like the pro David Robinson early 90s podcast here. We're like, come on, respect this man. Yeah. Like, he was really good. But so it was kind of cool to see him have five there. Dwayne Wade with one. Grant Hill with one. Hakeem Olajuwon, one. James Harden, one last year. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, two. Karl Malone, two. Kevin Durant, two. Kevin Garnett, three. Kevin Love, one. 2014 was for Kevin Love. Larry Bird, I was shocked, only two. 87-88.
Yeah, interesting that late in his career too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the same with LeBron James. Oh, sorry.
I was going to say same with Malone, where it's 97-98. I mean, he's like 15, 16 years in his career at the
Malone was a killer. In 30 years.
I mean, I know he was great in his older years, but it surprises me that he was, you know, at least according to this, better in those years than he was, mm-hmm. you know, like in, you know, 1990-91.
Absolutely. LeBron James has seven of these, which is just insane. 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014. So LeBron, good. Yes. Magic Johnson, four. 87, 89, 90, and 91.
Yeah, again, late in his career, too.
Yeah, were you surprised by that? I thought that was kind of interesting.
It does.
None of the mid-80s really got it, except for 87.
If there's something about how a player ages that, you know, if this picks up at all, like the fact that you just kind of get to be a smarter player as you're older and that, you know, you're you know, maybe you're not as productive in some ways, but you're able to, you know, I'm not sure exactly how much it's able to kind of keep to take into account something like that, but that would be, you know, what I would think as far as the reason why they would be able to achieve this despite, you know, being past their athletic peak.
Yeah, excellent. Michael Jordan had five. So, LeBron has more than him, so get all mad. 88, 89, 90, 91, 92. Now, what's interesting is the inverse with Michael Jordan, where we talked about all of these other guys and their later careers. That was when they really, like a Karl Malone, of course. And Michael Jordan, no, it's the early sort of his physical prime was when he really excelled in this stat. So that was fun.
Yeah,
was
I wonder, you know, thinking about it for Magic and Bird, I wonder if, because Magic had to kind of take a larger role in from 87 through 91, you know, with Kareem retiring and, you know, kind of necessitating it becoming his team. Plus, he wasn't that old. You know, he had to retire young. He was 31, 32. I mean, so he wasn't quite ancient. Bird, to maybe to a similar extent, because, you know, even though he had McHale and Parrish, they definitely were a less deep team. So maybe, you know, the fact that they kind of had to take like a bigger role during these times might have played a part in this. You know, it's just kind of speculation, but it does make some sense.
Certainly. Russell Westbrook has two, 2005 and 2016. So, of course, this year he's in there. as well. That could be subject to change. But
yeah,
Shaquille O'Neal, 2000 and 2001. I thought that was kind of interesting that none of the early Shaq years were there. But he really became. I mean, I would say that his real like kind of statistics. I mean, his prime was those years. I'm fine with saying that. I mean, he was a more dominant physical force probably in like the mid 90s. But this is like especially in that era. I mean, there was just no answer for Shaq in 2000.
And he had a couple of he had a couple of mildly down years from like 97, 99 before he came back with a vengeance. So that may that's kind of part of it too, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Steph Curry has two, 2015, 2016. I imagine he will probably stay in there. And then last but not least, I was kind of shocked by this. Tim Duncan only won 2003. I mean, obviously his best year, but yeah, I was kind of surprised. But that's it is Tim Duncan, and he's sort of more appreciated by watching him than sort of looking at his numbers, even though he does have pretty gaudy numbers sometimes.
Yeah,
but.
And he's sort of, and again, in a lot of his career, he's sort of taken the intentional step back.
Exactly, right.
So, you know, that could definitely be a part of it. Yeah, we'll play around with it more and learn more about it and see if there's anything else that we can kind of conclude there. But it's nice to it's nice to have a tool that that theoretically could be interesting to us as basketball historians. And so the one last thing is Kevin Pelton of ESPN, who was of course part of the NBA rank and wrote a bit about it. Coming up with the a metric of championships added, and basically. The idea is that it incorporates both regular season and postseason success, but it sort of gives a little bit of extra value to postseason success. Also incorporates all-star appearances, all-NBA appearances, and MVP voting based on how well they translate to winning championships. So it's sort of, and with win shares, it sort of takes care a little bit of the problem of rewarding longevity over quality of play, because it sort of relates the win shares to each season to a typical team's chances of winning a championship. So he used the example of, for instance, a season with a 15 win shares, which was using the example of Kobe Bryant's 2006 season, is nearly three times as valuable as one with 10 win shares, even though it's only five more win shares. It's just that much better to have a 15 win share season than it is to have a 10 win share season, because 15 win share seasons are obviously very rare. So, yeah. So the conclusions are not exactly that surprising. It's Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, LeBron James, Kareem, Russell, Duncan, Shaq, Magic, Bird, and then Karl Malone. And I don't think we have to explain too much with Jordan. Wilt, I guess, is a little bit surprising because he, of course, didn't actually have that much. I mean, he won two championships, is not successful, but Russell is so much more successful, obviously, 11 championships in 13 years. But the idea of that Wilt's just, his play theoretically should have added that much. And,
right.
He was first in regular season, third in the playoffs. So his production in the playoffs fell off a little bit comparatively. That kind of knocked him down a little bit. As far as other than I would think maybe I would have I would have just thought of Russell as being a little bit higher, but again, Russell's value I think is difficult to measure because he didn't score a lot.
Absolutely.
But he and defense, we know so little about defense now that we have all the tools that we have. Knowing about it in Bill Russell's day is extremely difficult as well, especially since turnovers, block shots, and steals weren't tracked then. So
exactly. I mean, that almost would be the game changer, especially if you sort of added those stats in there, I think, in a sense. But because a lot of stuff that Russell excelled at so much. And again, I'm not taking, I think Will Chamberlain is probably fine being there. But if you wanted to say that, yeah, hey, if we track some of those, and maybe if Bill Russell was a little bit more, apt to score a little bit more as opposed to just sort of, get the awesome block, throw the ball down. I mean, it obviously worked. You could say to an extent for the old Boston Celtics of that era. But yeah, so I see why, I understand why he's fifth on this list, and I understand why, but yeah, if you were purely just going to say, hey, who who helped their team win more championships, you're going to probably say Bill Russell or whatever. But, you know, statistically, you get Will Chamberlain there. But I have no issue really with any of the guys on this list. I think it's a really good, really good list. And I think the approach to it is admirable as well. And I really do think it's pretty
good. I
like
Kevin Pelton a lot. And I appreciate that he, you know, writes some about history, talks about history when he's on podcasts and stuff and has a good perspective. So he's definitely a guy to follow. Yeah, he ranked 40. A couple surprises to me, or not huge surprises, but Dirk was 15th on this list. So that kind of, as opposed to Garnett at 18. That may have helped him a little bit in the 17th ranking that we talked about before. Hakeem was 19th, so sort of lower than you might expect, just given, like, you know, his famous playoff appearances. Artis Gilmore was 29th on this list, and I think his reputation is a little bit more of like a guy who didn't necessarily do that much in the playoffs and just kind of accumulated like a lot of, you know, like a lot of longevity and a lot of regular season stuff, but didn't really have playoff success. But this, you know, has him pretty high, so I found that interesting. Other than that, it's not, you know, there aren't a whole lot of huge shocks on the list. Chauncey Billups is 38th. He's a guy who I've touted before as being, you know, maybe a little more valuable than stats show. So,
Well, I one thing that I thought was interesting, sorry not to cut you off here, but there were a few guys that we talked about in the earlier list that we were like, oh man, I can't believe how low they were ranked or how, you know, they were ranked in general. You look at championships added, Bob Pettit, 21st, Dolph Schayes, 23rd, and then a guy like Paul Arizin, 35th for him. So those are guys who ranked very well in this.
George,
and we've
George
sort
Mikan
of said, hey,
we would... too, so.
Oh, yeah. I completely missed George Mikan as well. Yeah, that's perfect examples of guys that we think that maybe just got kind of a raw deal in NBA rank, but this sort of stat shows the value that those guys had and how good they were, especially, you know, a Pettit, a Mikan, and to a lesser extent Schayes, and then to a lesser extent Arizin.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, like the approach that, you know, the way that he describes it, obviously we don't have a statistical model like he does, but we do have kind of a, like, I would say
our brains are a statistical model.
I would say this is sort of how I would kind of look at, you know, this sort of like the thing that I would look at. Okay, look at these numbers, look at these honors, see what it says, and then do the research deeper in to try to kind of figure it out. But these are sort of the way that I would largely weigh these. And the one thing that I hadn't really thought about is how much is like the exponential value of a 15 win share season versus a 10 win share season. And that might be interesting to kind of look into a little bit more and look at like some of the more elite seasons and how to, you know, how much better to weigh them because of just how much better they are than, you know, a really, really great season, you know. And I guess you could kind of make that case with Stephen Curry this year. So, but, you know, other than that, I think, you know, these just are mostly common sense things that, you know, that kind of makes sense. I do feel like sometimes I think longevity gets a little bit of a raw deal over the high points of a career, but I do think that it's a nice blend of those approaches. Anything else, Rich?
I think that's it for me. Yes. So, I mean, it was, I thought by and large, I think it was a cool little experiment, and at least it got people interested a little bit more in sort of NBA history. It's not only us and a few other guys that are really interested in it. And that's not to say, I mean, there are plenty of people that are interested in it, but to see it on such of a bigger scale and to have people arguing about guy, like, you know, there's spirited Bob Pettit arguments in my Twitter feed, and that doesn't happen very often. So
it's,
I thought,
nice.
That was cool to see.
Hopefully, it got some basketball reference, some traffic, and got some interest going on in there. It was fun. So, I figured it was a big enough thing that we should weigh in on it. Again, we're weighing in a little bit late, but hopefully, people enjoy our take on it and enjoy the things that we do to talk about basketball history. So,
absolutely.
So anyone can check us out at hardwoodparoxysm.com. We are on Twitter at Over and Back NBA, also on Facebook at Over and Back NBA. And we would be so grateful if you would subscribe to us on iTunes, or we are now on Stitcher as well. So if you subscribe to us, give us a good old review and a rating on either of those platforms, that would be greatly appreciated. I think that's it. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back again soon. We'll be right back.